In the Edenverse, we're going to help you understand the Bible through the lens of the original audience. I'm Nathan.
And I'm Karen, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey guys, welcome to the latest episode on the Edenverse. I am here with my new friend, Marty Solomon. Marty, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, or everything, depending on where you want to stand. Yeah.
Yeah, roger that. It's kind of like it's a pretty chill Thursday morning. It's raining outside,
right.
And yet you look a little bit beyond anything, really, and there's a ton going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots. Lots, yeah, and lots.
For sure. A podcast is not foreign to you. I feel like you do a lot of podcasting. Is that true?
Yeah, we do. We do plenty. We have what we call the Bema podcast. And when we started that years ago, we weren't even really trying to have a podcast. We were trying to use a podcast to get content to our college students.
Yeah, totally.
And then one day we kind of woke up and realized there's a lot of people listening to this. And then we changed hosts and we realized there's actually a lot of people listening to this.
Yeah.
And so then we've been trying to steward this 200-pound baby ever since. So that's what it is.
That's an interesting image.
Yeah.
That I'm sure feels very true to you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And Brent would be the one that feels the weight of that. I mean, he's always just, even though we weren't trying to do a podcast, he always did podcast really well.
Yeah,
and I'm really thankful for Brent Billings. So
that's awesome.
Shout out to him.
Come on. Shout out to Brent. So you're the president and director of discipleship, right, for Impact Campus Ministries. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, so Impact started in the mid to late 90s, restructured about 2008, 2009 to just kind of refocus on campus ministry. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's always been so important to us and true to us is, we might say, spiritual formation.
Yeah.
We've always been people that want to know. Like if we're known for anything, we want to be the campus ministry that's known for how to pray, how to fast. To know what the voice of Jesus sounds like, and to get in those spaces. So we've always been a pretty spiritual formation, prayer-centric campus ministry. So we don't do a lot of worship settings or big attractional stuff, but a lot of small group discipleship, teaching people how to pursue Jesus with everything.
Yeah. I mean, the disciplines are a means of grace, right?
Yep.
So it's like, hey, let us walk alongside of you.
Yep.
It's so interesting. I've actually been meditating on that passage in the Gospels when Jesus says, my sheep hear my voice and they know me.
Yes.
Right? It's like, oh.
Right.
It feels like that's a pretty critical thing to learn, especially when there's so many voices in everybody's life, you know. How do you listen to the voice of God?
Absolutely. And you've got to, you do have to put in some intentional work into that so that you can, like, getting to know a voice requires some level of intimacy,
totally
some
does.
Level of pursuit.
Yep.
And so that's critical.
Yeah. Yeah. Formation doesn't just like happen to you.
No.
You don't float into it or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is our whole shout out. That's our whole Pace and Practice podcast. Mm. So y'all should check that out. But then you also are the author of a book, Asking Better Questions of the Bible, which as soon as I saw that title, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about what prompted you to create that resource and what's that about?
Yeah. And really that book is really the podcast journey in a book. Like we take 5 seasons on the podcast to walk through the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation, do a quick little jaunt through church history just to try to have a better understanding of what was the conversation happening in the Bible between author and audience?
Yes, good.
And those are the questions that I don't think we're trained to ask, particularly as leaders or as teachers or as pastors. The center of gravity seems to revolve around a theological system rather than truly around the book.
Yes.
And so, the podcast and then the book was really just a tour through the biblical library saying, this story of God comes to us in the form of different sections of a biblical library. And Torah is not like the prophets, and the wisdom literature is different than Paul's letters, and the gospel is not the same as apocalyptic literature. And so knowing what part of the biblical library you're in enables you to ask the right questions depending on where you're standing and what you're reading, so that we don't just read the Bible the same no matter where we're at, but we have an awareness of where we are and what we should be asking.
Well, and really good Bible readers who understand the genres can understand that they're reading a historical narrative in the Greco-Roman biographies, right? But then all of a sudden, in the middle of that, they get dropped into apocalyptic.
Sure,
and it's
absolutely.
Like, wait a minute, what's going on, right?
Right.
But
correct.
And if you don't appreciate or understand that, you just kind of mow over it, and it's all the same. And it's like, it is definitely not all the same.
Right, absolutely.
That's awesome.
And the beauty of where we're at today with the internet and everything else is that it doesn't require some special knowledge and it doesn't require a seminary degree. This is stuff that we can all become more aware of, and any of us can learn how to ask those kind of questions.
Super available.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of resources. I mean, yours and many others.
Many, many others. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, before we dive into your story, tell us a little bit about your family, your wife, you've got a couple kids. How'd you meet your wife? Where are you guys right now in the journey of life?
Yeah. So my wife, Becky, she and I have been married for, it'll be 20 years in January of 24. And we have two kids. I have a daughter about ready to turn 15. I have a son who has just turned 13 recently, and they're great. We moved to Cincinnati in June of 20, and that was a great move, and we enjoy what the city has to offer. We were in Idaho our whole life prior to that. I was like a rural Idaho kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Grew up in southern Idaho, went to Bible college there. That's where I met my wife. Her family is in Idaho and Montana, and so we were always kind of those rugged Pacific Northwesterners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to work in campus ministry and spent a decade on the Palouse, which is really just the northern, it's where University of Idaho and Washington State University is. It's people always want to know, what is the Palouse? It's this high desert farming plateau, and that's what they call the little region there, and that's where I was for 10 years working with college students before I moved to Cincinnati.
Nice. That's awesome, man. And where is Impact Ministries? Where is that?
You know, we don't have a headquarters. We've always found that to be a great strength. So our executive team is all over. I got an executive in Alaska. I've got one in Vegas. There's two of us in Cincinnati, and it's just a great setup that we were doing Zoom before it was cool.
Yeah,
we were doing GoToMeeting before Zoom was a thing. Like we were
before COVID hit.
That's right. We've been doing that for years and years. We got campus ministers all over the country, and we get together for monthly prayer meetings and business meetings, and that's just always been a pretty decentralized approach to what we do.
Yeah, that's great. So in your story, I don't know a ton about you. I mean, I've read a little bit, just a bio stuff. But there seems to have been your theological tradition that you were formed in.
Mm-hmm.
But then there seems to be some sort of like kind of dissonance as you grew to go, wait a minute, something seems to be off here. Yeah. And what is that thing? So why don't you walk us and our audience through that story?
Yeah, I was raised in a pretty evangelical fundamentalist context and upbringing with my family. I always kind of knew what it was to go to church. I was raised in a Dutch Reformed tradition, not because we were Dutch or even because we were Reformed, but that was the church that
was
we—
That was just your people, man.
Yeah, that was the church that we found like a home in. Yeah. And so that was what ended up shaping me. And I was a Bible nerd in ways that the rest of my family maybe wasn't. And so I dove into theology, and I was like deep in Reformed theology, so committed, like overcommitted. Like my own Reformed pastor was like, hey, you could probably step back and chill out a little. And I was like, oh, it's just because you're soft and weak. And so that was—
You needed a hug, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to Bible college, and I went to, you know, I really felt strongly that God was calling me to this Bible college, and it was at the opposite end of the theological stream from what I was raised in.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think in a healthy way, like, this will be good, this will be challenging. I was kind of a jerk and a little too narcissistic to really do that well, but I stepped into college, and I started pastoring a church, and I had a student in my ministry. There was a youth, our youth ministry. He never missed. Perfect attendance. Atheist kid. And he was my project. I was going to get this kid saved. Yeah, yeah. So we would go out every—
He was elect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether he knew it or not.
Absolutely. We would go out every Thursday, and we would argue about he was a Darwin evolution guy, and I was at that point in my life, I'm a 7-day literal young earth creationist.
Yeah.
We go out every Thursday to argue about the book of Genesis. And he came from a broken family. And he lived with his mom, but he would do breakfast with his dad every Tuesday and Thursday. And I would pick him up from his dad's house on Thursdays and go out and have that coffee meeting. And he walked in one morning, and his father had taken his life. And he was one that found him. And I showed up about 20 minutes after the cops had left. He jumps in the car. He doesn't say anything to me. We go argue about the Tower of Babel. I find out 2 days later about his dad. And that moment, let alone what it was for him, that moment sent me into this like theological tailspin.
Yeah.
And what the irony is, my theology actually explained that perfectly.
Yeah.
That like God's the potter, we're the clay, everything's done for God's glory. Yeah. There it is. Yeah. And in that moment, I was like, I don't want my theology to explain this. Like if that's what this is, if that's really what I believe, I'm not okay.
Yeah. Wrong path, brother.
Yeah, I just, and so I went into this weird little 3-month kind of tailspin, and somebody, I mean, I had great mentors that were loving me and walking alongside of me, and I wasn't telling them everything, but they could sense some stuff, and they were trying to give me, they would open up this window, crack that door. They were trying to find something that would help. And finally, somebody handed me this new hermeneutic, a new way of reading the Bible, yeah, a new way of doing theology, which was, let's look through the lens of those early authors and audiences.
Yep.
And that's what blew the doors open for me.
Yeah.
And
bro, what a gift, man, to have mentors guide you in that.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's rare.
Yeah, I'm indebted to them. And what I love about them is they weren't like Bible nerd mentors. Mm-hmm. They weren't Bible hermeneutics people. They were Jesus people. Yep. Like, they wanted to teach me how to pray. They wanted me to know Jesus. But they also knew me well enough to know that I needed some intellectual stimulation. Yep. And so...
Yeah, it's called love.
Yeah, yeah.
They were loving you well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had loved me well enough to know me, and then they continued to love me through that.
Yeah, that's so good.
Absolutely.
So when that door opened and you started walking through it, what did that look like?
Just me devouring a new way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student. I'm a teacher. So I love to learn. I love to study. I love to research. So it was just like opening a fire hydrant and drinking deeply. Hey,
this brother's my dog right here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. So that's what I did. I mean, I was there were some key teachers that were shaping my paradigm, and I was devouring everything that they were. And at that point, I'm young. I'm learning these new things. And really all I'm doing is parroting.
Yep.
Like, I'm just I'm mimicking because I'm trying to learn a new language. Yep. I can't just learn a new paradigm overnight.
Just rote memorization.
Yeah.
Yep.
And a lot.
Which is a huge, like, when you're first learning something, it's critical.
Yeah. 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 And then, you know, luckily you keep pushing through. Yep. You can stop there. Some people do.
Mm-hmm.
But then I met Ray Vanderlaan.
Mm-hmm.
Went over to Israel, and he was the one that, okay, you've learned this language, you've learned a way to see something, but now let me give you a bibliography, like let me give you the tools, and you can either use them or not.
Yeah.
But if you're going to really do this and do it well and do it in a way where you can own it and you can possess it for yourself, here's the direction to head. So,
and what year was that when you went to Israel?
First trip was 2008. Okay, my last trip was 2010.
Got it.
Yep. So a while ago, but
but
such a wild ride.
Yeah. And what was that like for you? I went in as part of my degree program at Wichita Baptist. I went in 2001, the summer of 2001. So I've got my own experience on that. But what was that like for you when you first went to the land and started to see all of this stuff and put pieces together?
It's so hard to put into words. Like, it wasn't all brand new because I had been studying it, but it was like for the first time you're actually seeing how this is real. This isn't abstract ideas. This is this was a real thing, and it's a concrete experience for me. I happened to go on that first trip with like 54 Amish people, and so it was like two tours in one. Like,
seriously,
I'm encountering like all this teaching about Hellenism, and the Amish gentleman next to me is weeping because he has an extra buggy in the barn. Literally, that's what he's saying. And I'm like, but I just bought like a 72-inch plasma screen television. Like you have no idea. But I'm like having to process all of this culture.
Bro, it's a multi-layered cross-cultural experience.
Yeah, yeah. So that was great. But I learned a lot of things about discipleship. I learned a lot of beautiful things about community. And I came back and wanted to start, I needed to process that.
Yeah.
I could not learn it and not do something with it.
Yeah, right.
And so that's really what led me into campus ministry was – the church saying, we love this, we agree with it, but that's not your job. Like, it's not what we hired you for. And so we're going to help you find what's next, and you're not in a hurry. As long as you keep working hard, we're going to help you figure it out.
That's great.
And over that journey, it became campus ministry. I wanted a group of people where they could say yes to Jesus. They could try something new without parents getting in the way, but they also wouldn't have a mortgage and 3 children and a marriage and a career.
Right.
And that was the right window demographic for young adults to have the naivete to try something new.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful.
Yeah. It was your story too, right?
I mean,
there's
a
deep resonance there with you.
Yep.
And they're the next generation. I mean, it's kind of like, hey, you want to, like, you can see it to the future. Just look at the up and coming leaders of tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We contacted a donor the other day just to say thanks, and unprompted, he said, you know, I just started a a study with a bunch of 20-somethings and college students. And he said, why did you do that? And he said, because I'm going to be dead in 20 years.
Yeah.
And if this dies with me, I'll have to answer for that.
Yeah, totally.
And I thought, what a beautiful that's an intuitive way of looking at things. And
for
I love that.
Yeah, for sure. So how would you very generally describe the shift that happened inside of you? So you've used words like got a new hermeneutic, a new way of reading the Bible. I'm assuming that you moved a little further away from the strict reformed, kind of hyper-Calvinism or whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
Where did you end up landing? And I mean, obviously that's a really long story, but give us the high level.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because I think the way that we usually will answer that question is like we have this buffet of theological systems and that's what we know. Mm-hmm. And yet I felt like, and this, I don't mean this to sound like, but I felt like there was a whole nother thing that's not on the buffet. Yep. And then I have my own Jewish heritage, which is another part of my story that Ray helped me grapple with. Because I was raised in that evangelical world, but I also had an awareness of my own paternal Jewish roots.
Got it. Was your dad – trace that back.
So, yeah. So that goes – so we knew that my family comes out of Cornwall, England. There was a very Jewish presence, and our larger extended family on the paternal side was Jewish. Now, my dad
– and your last name is Solomon.
Exactly. I mean, that's – that was really the story. Like when I went on that last trip with Ray, I can remember walking in the airport and I had grown my beard out to just be, my wife had told me to grow my beard out.
Yeah.
And when your wife tells you to grow facial hair, you don't ask.
You just do it.
You just do it. And so I had grown my beard out and I walked around the corner and he took one look at me and went, oh, I'm such an idiot. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you're Jewish. And I was like, well, that's kind of a weird thing to say. Yeah. And he grabbed my name tag. He says, your name always been spelled that way. And I said, since 936 AD, Cornwall, England. And he said, that name's never come out of Western Europe and not been Jewish. And I was like, okay. And for the first few days of the trip, whenever he would talk about Jews, he'd put his hand on my shoulder or he'd point to me from across the way. Hmm. And I was like, man, what are you doing? Yeah, like, I just didn't get it. And then there was a day where somebody referred to me as their semi-Jewish friend. And I remember Ray just kind of went bananas and he called the whole group over and he said, I don't want to hear anybody ever call him that again.
Yeah.
If you're a Jew, you're a Jew and there's nothing you can do about that. And I knew that theologically. I just never reflected on my own story. Mm. And Ray was beautiful. He said, I think you have all the freedom in the world in Jesus. I don't think you have to do anything, but someday you're going to have a college student that's paying attention and you're just going to need to know how to answer the question. If that's what you believe, why don't you eat kosher? You just need to know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
And so that was... that's an additional layer beyond just a hermeneutic. It's a personal part of my own identity and story that I started to associate with Jewish wisdom, with Jewish perspective, with the way that a Jew sees the story. And I felt very strongly that I wasn't going anywhere. This family, this evangelical family, they're my family. But what is it that I'm learning and what is it that I have to give and how do I serve this community?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I ended up landing, is maybe in this weird, I don't even know what to call it. It's like this weird hybrid of evangelical values and commitments, but Jewish wisdom and rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Not rules. That's the wrong, that's going to give people the wrong
tradition.
Name. Yeah.
Like observing, like you probably do the Paschal meal and
absolutely
stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. But I even just the hermeneutic, to read the Bible the way a Jew reads the Bible, or to be aware of, I love the evangelical commitments to Jesus in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. No bones to pick there. Yeah. Love that. But yet we're reading the Bible through a classical theological lens. And there are these resources that we can read the Bible through that ancient. It doesn't mean that the Jews were always right in how they read the scriptures, but it sure feels like that's one of the better places to start. Yep. So that's
well, and the literature comes out of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
and what it did for me is it also enabled me to have a new appreciation for my tradition. I was no longer anchored to traditions or anybody else's tradition because that was the center of gravity. It was an expression of how my faith has developed over centuries. You know, our faith has developed over centuries. So it was no longer, I don't know, it did something in my ability to be like, and I'm in a Reformed church.
Yeah.
Or now I work in like a independent Christian church, Church of Christ context. You couldn't be more different.
Yeah, totally.
But I could work in either of those places and really enjoy it and appreciate it.
And navigate it and appreciate the strengths of both.
Exactly.
And, all that stuff.
And that's beautiful.
Really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. So what are a couple of the things that you've learned as you've arrived at your own personal history and embracing kind of Jewish roots, but then also gaining this new hermeneutic. What doors did that unlock for you into the specifically the scriptures? So we've talked about reading this. I mean, the vast majority of people in our tradition read the scriptures through a very Western Greek influenced, way of seeing the world. What did that feel like for you when you started to read it differently?
Yeah, that's a great question, and what I that's really important. What I feel like I try to gift other people in the conversation. So I heard one rabbi say it this way: like Westerners read the Bible looking for truth, but Jews read the Bible looking for meaning.
Yeah,
and what I love about that is we will analyze the scripture looking for history or the things that are true or even theological truths, but the Jewish mind is often asking the question: how does this change me?
Yeah.
Like not what is true in the story, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with asking those questions.
It's just a different question.
Yes. Yep. How does this – why is this story meant to provoke me? Mm-hmm. How does this story transform me? God's not wasting paper space just to tell me what happened historically or just to teach me theological ideas, but he wants the story when I'm done to have shaped and transformed. Like he's going to use that – Paul will say the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Like this word of God is something that God wants to use – the Spirit wants to use to really change and transform us.
Yeah,
and those are the questions.
For sure. One of the ways that we talk about it around here is it's relational.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Whenever you're just dealing with cold, hard facts, it's a very derelationalized way of doing it. But if you're not just reading a story, but the story as meditation literature is actually designed to pull you into the story and transform you, right? That's deeply relational.
Yep.
And that's a really critical piece in understanding even, all the stuff that we talk about on this podcast. It's like, hey, you're not just supposed to just look at words on a page.
Right.
This is actually a doorway into a reality. I was telling somebody yesterday, actually, that information can only go so far, right? Yeah. But it stops short of what story can do.
Right.
Story is a vehicle that can take you to places that information is limited to be able to take you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's there's a power that's inherent in storytelling that is absent in so many other vehicles that we're used to. Yep. It's absolutely true.
Yeah. Yep. So what do you tell somebody who's maybe listening to this right now and they're going, man, that's where I'm at. I feel like I've done the Bible study thing. I've maybe done the rote memorization. I've got my, I did the topical memory system and, I've got all my Bible verses and I know the bridge and I can share my faith, but like, really, am I just kind of spinning on a hamster wheel here?
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's a common thing I hear, like, is this all there is?
Right.
What do you tell somebody like that?
Yeah. I mean, part of it's going to have like this inherent self-awareness of knowing like how I'm wired. Cause for some of us, we're thinkers and we need to be challenged and provoked by the feeler. Like we need to have some contemplative practice. We need to have a little bit of mysticism that makes us uncomfortable, worked into the experience, and that's going to be part of it.
Yeah.
Some of us are the opposite, and we're feelers, and some of us are going to – but there's the beauty of where we're at today is there's so many great resources, and whether it's the Bible Project and their podcast or whether it's any of these other resources that we might be familiar with and can use, find the one that's resonant for you.
Yeah.
They're not all – they don't all work for all of us for a whole host of different reasons,
but
the one that makes you go, this is – It's like I'm learning it all over again. It's like I'm find that and lean into it and let that shape you. But if that's not just intellectual, because you've learned all the stuff and you know all the theology, find that place that makes you go, oh, I don't like that. That's too subjective for me. And lean into that and try some of those spiritual practices. Lean into that contemplative space. See what Jesus is trying to do. Get a good therapist or a spiritual director. Like, those things will radically change your life.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like you've just plugged Eden Project.
Well,
that's what we do.
Okay, wonderful. There you go.
You can jump into one of our Journey Home retreats, or you can be a part of our Eden Lead Year, which is a lot of, I've found in my own journey and my own experience that those places that at first seem kind of scary to you, where you're like, it took your buddy finding his dad.
Yeah.
And then you going and arguing about the Tower of Babel with him. It took something like that to jar you.
Correct.
Like loose.
Yep.
To where you're like, wait a minute, this is bigger than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And those times can be really scary for people. They are really scary, but they're also really critical And I tell people all the time, I'm like, hey, when those tension points happen, even theologically, don't fight them.
Yep.
Sit.
Yep.
Listen. Like, right. Allow the reorientation to happen. And you may, I mean, in a period, in a tension point or in a disorientation, you may circle back around and land where you started. You know, yeah. That might happen. And good if it does. But a lot of times what will happen is a door that opens up and you're like, oh, I'd never right. considered this over here. Yep. And so I had a mentor of mine tell me one time, he's like, hey, dude, follow the truth wherever it leads.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid of it.
Yeah.
You know, so yep. as you're talking, I'm thinking about those, our audience who's listening to our voices right now, who's going like, oh, well, I kind of am afraid of this or that or whatever. Yeah. And I feel empathy for them.
Yeah.
I'm telling them, hey, don't do it alone.
Right.
But take the journey.
Well, and here's what I loved about my evangelical upbringing. They taught me two things above all else, Jesus and the Bible.
Yeah.
Jesus and the Bible.
Yep.
And a lot of everything else I've had to kind of pull apart. But Jesus and the Bible, I've always just proven in my own experience to be, so when the floor feels like it's going to fall out underneath you, like Jesus and the Bible are bigger than that floor and they're going to catch you.
Preach.
Like they're going to be big enough. Our theological systems, our traditions, our paradigms, whatever, that may fall out from underneath us, but underneath it is something more stable, bigger than that, and it will be okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That same mentor who told me to chase truth, his mom told him as he was growing up, she said, nail one foot down into the person of Christ, and you can dance all around it you want, but you know, that's your sure foundation.
I love it. Yep. Yeah,
that's awesome. And Marty, thanks so much for letting us in on your story. I mean, I realize that's a very, you know, surface flyover, but I think it definitely encouraged me to hear how the Lord's moved in your life and the shifts that he's brought about. And so you guys, y'all stay with us. We're going to be back with another episode with Marty talking about the BEMA podcast and context. So hang with us and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Edenverse. If you like what you heard, subscribe. Tell your friends, give us a rating. If you have questions, email us at podcast@edenteam.org. If you want to know more about our organization, visit our website at theedenproject.com. Lastly, check out all of our other podcasts. Thanks for spending part of your day with us, and remember, God loves you. Bye.
Peace.